Hello, everyone. You are listening to the latest Flyers Talk podcast presented by Great Railing. I am Jordan Hall, and as always, I am joined by the wonderful Taryn Hatcher and the dynamic Joe Fordyce. Joe and Taryn, we have arrived at Flyers training camp. Flyers training camp is this week. The season feels closer and closer. There's going to be plenty of competition. And of course, in the sport of hockey, there are injuries as well. So we're going to get into all of it. As we found out via a report, Samuel Morin apparently has injured his knee. We don't know how serious it is, but there will be an update coming out on that from the team. And then as we know, Wade Allison injured something maybe to his leg, whether it be an ankle or knee. We will find out. Again, we're not going to speculate, but he suffered the injury in Sunday's rookie game, and he could miss some time. So
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're going to jump right into that. And we also have a great one-on-one interview from Taryn with Morgan Frost, a prospect that's pushing for a roster spot. So a lot to get into. But let's start with Wade Allison and his injury and how that could impact training camp competition. As we know, he was vying and will be vying for a spot in the lineup, possibly in the bottom six. So, Taryn, if you can think of some guys that could benefit maybe from the opening of Wade Allison's injury, who would it be and why?
I mean, literally any other bubble forward. I really hadn't given it a whole ton of thought because it was kind of like Wade, Tanner, Cam were really the Morgan were the bubble guys that we were looking at. And I genuinely don't think there's a lot outside of them that are really viable bubble guys just yet. I mean, maybe with some more time seeing from Lehigh. I would say Sam, but I know they want to put Sam back at defenseman this year. So I don't think that really impacts him at all. Although that story is, I can't wait. We have media day tomorrow. And I hope to just catch him while he's there and be like, what is going on? Because that whole story is a little interesting, but I don't think it really opens up the door for anyone new. If anything, I think it opens up the door a bit more for some of the other bubble guys that we were talking about. We don't know how severe it is yet. I haven't really poked around about it just yet because they weren't, there wasn't any kind of camp or official practice yesterday in the building. So that, plus with injuries, you kind of want to give guys time to process what's going on. It's just tough for Wade. I know Lappy said it, but it's so true. Like, he was one of these guys who just put in a ton of work to really be kind of an attractive prospect to bring up more long-term on a team that already has a lot of depth, a lot of experience, a lot of veterans. He did the work and it was showing. He was really confident. He looked really smooth in rookie camp. Lappy, I mean, was just raving about what he saw from him. He looked like a veteran amongst young guys, and I know that he is, but that leadership, that confidence there was something that I really was happy to see because we didn't know a ton about him as a person when he was brought up last year because we didn't really get to see him, you know, away from games. So it was nice to see how confident he seemed. So you just hope it's not like too crazy of a setback and that it's, I know Alain Vigneault is going to talk later today from when we're recording the podcast. He probably would have already talked once the podcast comes out. So maybe we will know by now, but Yeah, it just sucks, to be honest with you. I think it just sucks because he's gone through so many kind of injury issues before, and he's battled back. He looked phenomenal, and you just hope it's something that's maybe like a day-to-day, week-to-week kind of thing, and that he can stay in some form of shape or do some skill work in the meantime that doesn't set him back too far. Beauty of this season, though, it's not 56 games. He's got more of a schedule to work with, trying to work his way back. So maybe we will get to see him, even if it's something a bit more difficult. But you just hope that's not the case. But I don't think it actually opens the – I could be totally wrong. At this point in what I've seen, I don't think it really opens the door for more players to enter that bubble. I think it just maybe gives other guys a little bit more space to work with trying to break onto the big club's roster.
Yeah, you really hope that it's nothing long-term, very serious, because, yeah, he has been through a lot. If you remember last training camp, he was on the ice for about a day and a half, and then suddenly he was off it, and we didn't see him again. Turns out he undergoes ankle surgery and misses like 4 to 5 weeks. Here, you know, he's finishing off a really good rookie camp. He was at development camp. He's been a leader among like the younger guys. He had that great audition. He's pushing for a spot. Final rookie game, and he injures something that could be an ankle again or a leg. It's just a shame. He dealt with it last year and set him back, and now he could miss training camp again or parts of it. It's a shame.
Jordan, you were at that game, right?
I was.
What did you see?
Yeah, so it was on the far end closest to the boards that we are, so it's at probably the toughest angle.
Hard to see.
Yeah, anything, but – yeah, he's just going for the puck. He's kind of racing to the puck with Rangers prospect Brendan Schneider. And he kind of goes in to maybe finish a hit or really just make a physical play along the board. And he kind of gets lifted up a little bit. And then he kind of comes down and it looks like he lands awkwardly on his right ankle. And when he kind of came down like quickly in the air, comes down, it looks like almost like a basketball player rolling his ankle in.
Yeah. In a way. Well, the thing that's maybe more reassuring about that is that if it's like, even if it's a high ankle sprain, like a more long-term ankle sprain, they normally don't take crazy long to heal. And you're able to do certain skill work while you're, you know, recovering and rehabbing. It was hard to see from the videos, and it almost looked like, I remember when Morgan hurt his shoulder, he almost looked like he got lifted and it crunched kind of a thing. And it was hard to tell if it was a knee, if it was a AC joint, if it was an ankle, if it was anything. And I haven't actually heard anything since. So I wasn't sure because I was watching on video. So it was hard to tell what was happening, but interesting.
Yeah. Very awkward play. And what tells me is probably something maybe to his leg is he kind of crawled off the ice and then he needed help off the ice. And when he was getting help off the ice, he wasn't putting any pressure on his leg. So, but it really was an awkward play. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, those kind of things, the not putting any pressure on it, the crawling over to the bench, the crawling over to the bench is something you see when a guy blocks a slap shot, like from Shea Weber or something. And we all know what that is. And we just kind of hold our breath and say, let's hope there's no broken bone. This is obviously not that kind of situation. So, you know, the visual is not good on it. So, it's a shame, as you guys have both alluded to, Wade Allison, the discussion when he came up last year and kind of infused so much energy into the lineup was that if he can stay healthy, this, if he can stay healthy, that, and we're, you know, here's where we are now all of a sudden. And his game, you know, he's not the tallest guy. He's an energetic guy. He plays around the net, which means he's going to play and has to play a physical style of game.
Yeah.
And you hope it doesn't turn into one of these things where he's a guy who can't change his style of play because of his size and sort of everything he's developed about his game, but he also can't stay on the ice. And there's just certain guys like that. And, you know, so that's really a shame for him, because I really found last year when he came up to those games he played in were the most watchable games of the year, particularly the first few games, And there was a refreshing humbleness about a guy who was producing in the lineup and also acted like he was just happy to be there. Because generally, the guys that are just happy to be there aren't really lighting up the score sheet. And he was doing both. So, you know, and I mean, just as you guys played on the podcast last week, Taren's one-on-one with him, just, I mean, a joy to hear this guy talk about playing the game of hockey. Of course, he said in that interview that that he thought the Flyers were going to surprise some people this year. He obviously was really looking forward to the season. So you got to hope that he doesn't have to miss a good chunk of the season, because that would be that would be significant. And we all have talked about when we were predicting the lineups that Morgan Frost's game doesn't really lend itself to fourth line play. But I would say if that has to happen at the beginning of the season, I don't know if they have a choice but to play Morgan Frost, because I'm not sure anybody else really is ready to be in the lineup right now on a consistent basis. So I really think it's if Wade is hurt and he's going to miss any time, I think it's probably Morgan Frost. You could say maybe Tanner Lozinski, but I would say Morgan would get the nod over Tanner. And of course, we know these guys are going to have to play if they're up here. So I don't think it's going to be a situation like the end of last year or the end of a down season where you're try this guy, try that guy. It has to be a consistent thing, particularly to start the season, because you don't want it to start affecting results and consistency in the lineup in the beginning of the season, particularly with a very new group of guys that are trying to find chemistry. You don't want to be changing the lineup every single day with now here's this prospect and here's that prospect and let's try this guy on the third line. And then you don't want it to trickle up in this case instead, you know, rather than down, because it would be from the fourth line basically up. You don't want to have the whole lineup affected by this. So I think it has to be a plug and play. And I'm not sure anybody but Morgan Frost is the answer for that if it has to be to start the season.
Yeah, Taren, do you feel like this could, I don't want to say an injury benefits a player, because I know his teammates don't want him to get hurt, but in terms of playing time and maybe opening the door, maybe it is Morgan Frost. I could see that because, as Joe was mentioning, they do have guys that maybe were penciled in at center that can play wing. And given they have a hole at wing now, maybe, maybe potentially it opens up the door for Morgan Frost, because say a Derek Brassard moves to the wing or Scott Laughton moves to the wing. Do you feel like that could be the case?
Yeah, for sure. And I was kind of thinking before, just based off of what I've seen from Morgan and seeing Morgan in person the other day at camp, and he does look bigger. He does look stronger. He, in our interview, which you'll get to hear here, he was very much, like, I think he very much embraces the reality that, yes, most people think I have to be like a top six guy based on my skill, but that's not probably going to happen here, at least not right now. And I have to get in where I can fit in, kind of a thing. And it seems like he's tried to recover and tailor his game as he has recovered to fitting more situations, I'll say. We won't know until we see him out there playing against NHL guys. So we'll get a better idea later at camp this week when we see him playing against NHL guys. But we know this, he said it before. I think he kind of alluded to it again in my interview. And I know it from being around him, talking to other reporters who've talked to him. Morgan has a hard time keeping on weight. I think his size was a big concern when it comes to playing fourth line against other kind of physical grinder type of guys. And Morgan's worked very hard to put on quite a bit of muscle. Yes, he's still not like the biggest Hulk inhuman in the world, but I think Morgan's efforts alone, maybe depending on, I don't want to put the carriage in front of the horse here, but I think depending on how he looks against the NHL guys later this week and then throughout the season, I think Morgan's work alone might have eventually pushed him ahead of Wade in terms of the number one call-up guy. I kind of hope that for him, because quite frankly, I think the Flyers want him to be that guy. I think they want him to be ready for the big club. But certainly now with what's going on with Wade, I think that kind of does some of the work for him in a crappy sort of roundabout way. But I wouldn't have been surprised if later in the season, whether it's scratching Nick and Derek Brassard or moving Derek Brassard, scratching Nick, bringing up Wade, bringing up Morgan, I wouldn't have been surprised if both of them were brought up at some point and if Morgan was kind of maybe the more highly touted one at that point in time.
Yeah.
Just because it sounds like he's really done a lot of work this summer. And I got the feeling from our interview and from the interview we did with him at the Skate Zone last week, it was really hard on him not playing hockey for as long as he did over the past, you know, X amount of months since he got hurt. But I think when you're away for that long, you're not so close to the picture anymore that you can't see it, that you see it differently, sort of a thing. And I think he looks at it a little different and can, you know, getting away from the minutiae of the everyday and where do I fit in and this, that, and the next thing, I think maybe helped him mentally reset an approach. That was the vibe that I got. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I do. I think it helps. I think as crappy as it is, and as much as no one wants to see Wade go down, especially because I know they're friends, I do think it helps Morgan's case, but I do think Morgan helped his case quite a bit given what I've heard about how he worked this off season and what I've seen and what he's said to me. Yeah. So in that way, hopefully he steps up and then the Flyers, you know, are happily surprised by the fact that they maybe have not one, but two steady call-ups between Morgan and Wade.
Yeah. And I still think it just moves everyone up a step closer, but I don't know if it really changes their opening night lineup a ton. In reality, someone still needs to unseat Nicholas Aube-Kubel. It was kind of going to be him and Wade Allison competing for a final winger spot. And I really think the Flyers deep down want Morgan Frost to start at Lehigh. I think they want him thinking and pushing for a job in their lineup, but the kids played two games in like 550 plus days since March 2020. So I just think they wouldn't mind him going to Lehigh, playing a huge role, being one of the guys that kind of starts the culture in Lehigh Valley under Ian LaPerriere, and playing in roles where he's going to get big minutes, he's going to kill penalties, he's going to play on the power play, all that, and then see where they're at. Because ultimately they still have a situation where Derek Brassard and Nate Thompson can be your third and fourth line centers, and your wingers are kind of set. And unless Nicholas Aube-Kubel or someone else gets banged up or really shows that they're not ready. So I think it makes everyone just a little bit closer. The Linus Sandins, the Connor Bunnemans, the Tanner Lozinskis, the Jackson Cates, they're all closer, but I don't know if it really changes their lineup a ton.
And I do feel bad because I feel like we, and it's fair based off last year, to be honest, as much as I hate to say it, but I feel like we've all in some of these situations for the hype and the excitement of these young guys written off that Nick Aube-Kubel is just like not going to be good. He could play very well. He did have stretches of the year before where he played very well, and the Flyers will be better off if he plays well, because when he's playing well, he does add something to the team. He adds quite a layer of physicality, which I kind of think they need, but I don't mean to sound like we are writing off Nick, because I have not seen anything from Nick yet. And while he did have a bad year last year, let's be realistic, only Joel Farabee, and for a portion of the season, James Van Riemsdyk had a good year last year. So I don't mean to just toss Nick aside. Nick could still like own this position and contribute for this team.
And Jordan, I should point out too, and we saw this last year, that if they're looking for a guy to just fill a spot here and there, rather than bring up one of these big prospects, Connor Bunneman has more games played in the NHL than any of these guys. I'm not talking about Aube-Kubel, but sure. You know, and we heard last year, Alain Vigneault talked highly about Connor Bunneman a lot.
Yeah.
After games. I mean, I remember him after games flat out saying that Bunny's line was the only line that played well.
Yeah.
And you know, they were playing more minutes than the top six at the end of certain games, because AV was so, you know, I guess perplexed with how his top, you know, top two lines were playing. So I wouldn't put that past him either, because, you know, he clearly, the coach likes Connor Bunneman, and he's played in plenty of games, and he can come in and not, you know, he's not going to come in and score a hat trick, but he's also not going to come in and cost you and appear like he doesn't belong there, which I don't know that you can make that guarantee with some of the other prospects that have such limited experience. So the Bunneman factor, I think, is a real one as well.
So, Joe, this is interesting, and Jordan can attest to this, because I brought this up the other day at rookie camp. I said, I feel like it's very bizarre. We've all gotten amnesia when it comes to Connor Bunneman, because we're all talking about Cam York, Kaczynski, Wade Allison, those three really being it. Morgan Frost, sorry. How could I forget about Morgan? Those four really being it. And meanwhile, Connor Bunneman's got the most call-up experience out of all of them. And I said, and I very vividly remember doing quite a few post games last year where the only positive comment that came out of AB's mouth after a less than stellar performance from the Flyers was about Connor Bunneman, his effort, and the way his line played. And I got absolutely lambasted in the media room for even saying it. But he petered off at the end of the year and this, that, and the next thing and yada, yada, blah, 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 and whatever. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I don't know if any of you actually listened to the press conferences we were a part of, but Alain Vigneault likes Connor Bunneman's efforts when he plays well, which goes for everyone, I think it's fair to say. But I would not be shocked if we get to camp and all of a sudden Connor Bunneman is playing with some of the NHL guys in these scrimmages and so on and so forth, because the devil you know is better than the one you don't sometimes. And I think Alain Vigneault feels like he knows what he gets from Connor Bunneman. And when he sees Bunny going bad, he knows what that looks like as well. So thank you for saying that, because I got looked at like I had 17 heads and I was just like, I didn't make this up. I didn't make up Bunneman love in my head. I know I did not. So I appreciate that, Joe, because
yes,
I will say in the media room, but some of the older gentlemen who maybe their memory is not quite as vivid as mine didn't recall that at all. And I was like, what is going on?
Well, I would say if you were to take a stat sheet and tally up every player from last year's team and their personal name mentions by Alain Vigneault, Connor Bunneman's in probably the top eight on the team of anybody that played last year. And what I think it is I think people get wrapped up in with Connor Bunneman. I think the thing is the ceiling with him is down here. The ceiling with these other guys is way up here, but they're nowhere close to getting to the ceiling yet. So, and I think that's what AV likes. He knows that it's an even keel player, and he's not a player that's going to be pushing anybody in the top six, but he's also not a player that's going to play his way out of the lineup by making bad decisions or things like that. He just comes in, he plays his solid 9 or 10 minutes as a fourth line player, and he can rely on him to be there and fill that time and be a solid player. And, you know, I don't think any of those other players that we're talking about, the Frosts, the Lisinskis, those guys are not players that are just in there to play 9 or 10 minutes. Those need to be more impact players, which is why I said their ceiling's higher. But Connor Bunneman can already get to his ceiling. And I'm not sure that players with 2 games experience in the last 2 years or 4 games experience, I don't know that they can get to Connor Bunneman's ceiling yet, while they should far surpass it in their future. That time isn't right now. And I think that's the thing with Connor Bunneman. And, you know, you can't – why is Nate Thompson on this team? Nate Thompson's not on this team to score goals. He's on this team because he has plenty of game experience. And he doesn't do things to hurt teams. And he can just get plugged into a fourth line. And you kind of just, it's almost like when you have,
he's a Toyota Camry. He's a Toyota Camry. It's not the sexiest car in the streets, but they run forever. They're good on gas. They don't have problems. You're not always putting them in the shop. Some of these guys are like a Jag. You know, Jaguars look nice. Some of them are sharp looking cars, but they're not super efficient on gas and they break down sometimes. That's you need some Toyota Camrys on your team. I had a Toyota Camry from 1994 until 2014. Nate Thompson is a Toyota Camry that never breaks down, drives well in the city on the open highway. And, you know, it doesn't, no one's driving by my 1994 Toyota Camry going, wow, that thing, what I would do for that car. No, but you know what? I wouldn't trade that car for the world. Until I moved to Hawaii and had to sell it, I would have kept it till a wheel literally fell off of the car and the car had no damage. They just put the wheel back on the car. This is a true story. And then I drove it all away and there was no damage to the car. Those people, you cannot beat that type of player. They are so, so critical to building a good team. You can't just have a bunch of like Ferraris and Lambos all over the place. It doesn't work. I think sometimes it's Toronto's problem, but that's neither here nor there. So, you need Toyota Camrys.
So Jordan and Taryn, I'm going to make a Bull Durham comparison here. So maybe Connor Bunneman is like Crash Davis in Bull Durham. Crash Davis is a triple A player. He's a career minor leaguer that can be called up and relied on at certain times. Whereas when Tim Robbins' character comes out, he's supposed to be the big time hotshot minor league player that is brought to Durham to study under Crash Davis. And he thinks he's already arrived and he thinks he's at his peak. Maybe some of these guys like Frost and Wozinski, maybe they're more like me. I'm not talking about their attitude, but maybe they're more like him in that they have the higher ceiling. But sometimes you need a Crash Davis to just come in there and settle things down. And I think in this scenario, Connor Bunneman might be that. Sorry, Jordan. It might have been talking over your head with the pop culture reference. Yeah. But, you know.
I know. I've never seen Bull Durham either, actually.
Okay. Well, Crash Davis is Kevin Costner's character.
There we go. Yeah, I've seen parts of Bull Durham. I can't say I've seen it in full, but I know the movie.
Can we just hijack the rest of the podcast and say what cars we think the players would be?
Yeah.
Like Sean Couturier would be like a Humvee, like something that's just never going to break down. I'm trying to think. Okay, we're not going to do this.
Yeah. No, we've got Bull Durham analogies. We've got car analogies. We got it all here. But yes, Connor Bunneman, I think a lot of people forget he played games in the bubble. He played games in playoffs because he was trusted that much and the team likes him that much. So absolutely not a guy to forget.
And those were some of the games where AV praised his play. Those playoff games in Toronto.
Indeed.
We heard it after a lot of those games, him praising his play.
Flyers Talk is brought to you by Great Railing. Stop into Great Railing for the highest quality and lowest prices for all your railing, decking, and fencing needs. Well, this really is a perfect time to get into Taryn's one-on-one interview with Morgan Frost, a guy that had a very good development camp, very good rookie camp, young prospect that still has tons of upside, and we're going to hear all about it in Taryn's interview right now.
All right, Morgan, thank you so much for joining us. We have got to talk to you for a while, so we'll do a little bit of catch-up and then a little bit of a look ahead to the future, if you're okay with that. We didn't get to talk to you a lot as you were coming back from the shoulder injury last February, because I know you weren't always around as you were dealing with some of the rehab from that. Can you kind of take us through just an overview of the timeline of the injury and all of the surgery rehab process that came after it?
Yeah. So after the injury, I think it was like about a week and a half or 2 weeks after it happened. I flew to Colorado. Spent a week there, got the surgery, spent a couple of days right after the surgery that were tough there. And then, I think it was like a week. And then I came back and pretty much just rehabbed for like 3 or 4 months. But I stayed until the end of the season. And, I had two other trips during that time back to Colorado just to see the surgeon and get everything checked up again, just quick 2 or 3 day trips. I was feeling pretty good. I started skating the last month of the season. Started picking up each week. And then, I was feeling pretty good going back home. And then just worked out all summer and made sure I took care of it before my workouts or before my skates and kind of just built the strength back up. And feels good now.
Yeah, does it feel – when did you start to feel 100%? Are you there now? When did you really feel like – okay, I'm not dealing with an injury anymore as much as I'm dealing with getting back into shape and game speed and everything else that comes with it?
I would say probably like the last month and a half, 2 months. I think every day it just kind of gets a little bit better. And you know, I got my mobility back and it felt good. I think at that point it was more about strengthening it because it was pretty weak from not doing very much. And yeah, I just kept doing that and kept ramping up, and now it feels, you know, we'll go 98%, very close to 100, but it's good. It doesn't bother me really anymore on the ice or doing activity or anything. So it's good.
That's good to hear. I know we were talking about this off camera. You mentioned you're trying to get your shoulder stronger. You actually physically look bigger through at least a Zoom call. It's kind of hard to tell. Have you been able to like put on strength and weight in the process of trying to rehab from the shoulder? Where were you at before? Where would you say you're at now?
Yeah, I'm definitely a little bit heavier. I think, you know, my goal was to get to 190, and I came here and did that. And now it's about trying to keep up the weight with all the activity that we're doing, which is never the easiest thing, but, you know, just trying to eat as much as I can and drink as many protein shakes. But yeah, I worked hard and I think I got a little bigger. I think, you know, I've been here for a little while now and I know what it takes to play in the NHL, and I definitely need to be stronger and harder on pucks. So yeah, that was the goal. And I think I did that a pretty good job of that this summer.
Everyone who put on the quarantine 15 and still hasn't lost it is screaming at their screen.
Yeah.
That answer.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. A lot of what I read, a lot of what I saw about you in development camp, the expectation kind of was that you're probably realistically too good to be there. And it seems like from everyone's account, that's kind of how you played it. Like you have this whole thing figured out at this point and mastered that level of the game. I wonder where do you feel like your comfortability is at with development camp? Obviously it's not your first one, and there were other development camps in the past where the expectations for you have always been high given your skill set and just, you know, the certain aspects of your game that are so impressive. Where do you feel like you're at now versus development camps in the past?
I think, you know, very far ahead. I think it's just a lot easier when you come in and you're comfortable with the staff and, you know, the guys and, you know, the coaches and trainers and everyone. It makes it a lot easier. And, you know, it's a lot better coming down here and I feel way more comfortable. So I think that translates to better performance on the ice. I mean, I think, you know, probably my first 2 years here is definitely a little bit nervous coming in for development camp. And, you know, now that I've been to my fair share of development camps, I feel pretty comfortable and, you know, not really getting nervous coming into the development camps. It's more just about getting better and, you know, trying to show, you know, what I can do and that I put in the work over the summer.
Just for a little context, where did you do your off season training this year and who was it with, just for some background information?
I did it in Aurora, Ontario, my hometown. I've been with the same trainer for the last 4 or 5 years. It's called JMP Performance. It's a little more low key than some of the other big ones, but I train every morning with Sean Walker, who plays on the Kings, and you know, he's a bit older than me and he works really hard, so you know, he's a good role model for me to follow every morning. And yeah, just stayed local.
What's the mindset for you now as we turn towards camp and not development camp, especially given, and I was just talking to Wade about this, it's interesting for a player like you. I feel like a ton of people believe in you, want to see you up with the big club, you know, consistently throughout the whole year kind of thing, see what you can do and come to kind of develop your potential to its max ability. But at the same time, the offseason, you're watching Chuck make all kinds of moves that add to the depth chart and lots of forwards being kind of traded around and acquired and picked up and so on and so forth. What's the mental approach for you in that situation, given the fact that even the conversation when it comes to you is often that you're a top six kind of player. So it's kind of hard because you have to jump from getting ice time to it's probably a top six kind of guy on top of that.
You know, honestly, I think for me, it sounds pretty cliche, but I'm kind of just trying to think about my own thing. I mean, it was really tough not playing last year. And, you know, you can do as much as you can in the summer to emulate, you know, camps and whatever, but it's never really the same until you actually get back here and, you know, you're going up against a bunch of other guys that are trying to make the NHL. And, you know, so I'm just really focused on myself. I mean, there's always going to be people moving in and out of the organization, and you know, we'll see what happens. But I think for me, the big thing is just to get my confidence back up and, you know, try and have a similar camp, if not better, to the one that I had last year where I made the team. And, you know, if not, you know, whatever, I'll keep working. And, you know, I really want to be on this team. So, you know, whatever it takes, I'm willing to do. And yeah, we'll see how camp goes up, how it goes.
Was last year, given that it was from February until whenever you were able to really skate again, was that the longest time that you've gone without playing hockey? I would assume since you were like, what, like five or something, since you were a small kid?
By far, yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, that was my first real true injury. I've never really missed probably more than a game with anything, you know, just little stuff. But yeah, it was definitely tough. It was very different. Like I said, I've never really been in that situation. I've never had surgery. I've never had to miss months, or I mean, even though it was a shortened season, the full season. So it was definitely a mental battle. And you know, I think the summer was good for me, kind of just to refresh my mind and get away from things. And you know, now that I'm back, I feel confident, I feel good. So
all right, well, Morgan, I've got construction going on and a bell dinging at Independence Hall behind me, so I will wrap up this interview. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you giving us your time, and good luck in camp, Morgan. We're all pulling for you.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Karen Hatcher and Morgan Frost, great interview. Loved hearing about Morgan Frost's outlook for training camp and this season. Only 22 years old and really hasn't played a full season yet at the pro level. Sometimes we forget about what a lot of these prospects have been through with COVID-19 and all the challenges the virus has presented to these young prospects. Taryn, what did you take away from your interview with Morgan?
I know I kind of touched on it before, but I think the experience of stepping away from the game, how that's been for him, obviously the emphasis for him on size, I think he does want to, I genuinely got the feeling from him and talking to people around the skate zone the days I was at rookie camp, that he wants to be able to play wherever the Flyers can play him. And I think before he knew that maybe his size and his skill set limited him into where he fit in if he jumped in. I don't think he wants people to look at him as a guy who, okay, he's really skilled, so he has to play top six and he's not physical or big enough to play against grinder type players. I don't think he wants that label on him anymore. And I think he made a conscious effort to try to prepare to be a little bit more versatile. I also think he's just, I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of these kids were kids until recently when it came to joining this team. I think he's more adult-like, both in his mind. He's always been a professional, but his mindset seems a little bit more adult-like. Physically, he looks more like an adult now. Because I've said this before and I'll say it again. And I know sometimes people are like, oh, it sounds weird when you talk about that stuff. But I interviewed him in Carolina, I think before his second NHL game. And I was kind of shocked by, when I stood next to him, how much he seemed like he was still a teenager, just in the way that he was built. And then you look at some of the guys on that Carolina team that he's going up against, and you're like, oh my God, he's going to get assaulted out there. Like, it just doesn't feel right. He looks now like he can compete with those players, regardless of where in the lineup he falls. Yeah. I know this on a different level from my own experiences. It wasn't until I got injured playing soccer and I had to take months and months and months away that I felt like I could watch a game in a different way. And every game that you watch is more of like a learning lesson for, all right, when I come back, I want to do things this way or that or the next thing. Because when you're in it, it's hard to see it. And I think it was a real difficult situation for him to be, injured and sidelined for, as he said in that interview, for the longest period of time since he started playing hockey as a little kid. But I think getting away from it helps you see a little better sometimes. So I hope that for him, that's the case in terms of, again, when you're in the middle of it all, how do you really see what's going on around you? Sometimes you kind of got to take that bird's eye view and get away from it. I think he did. So that's what I got from it, to be honest with you. Danny looks bigger.
Yeah.
That's helpful in hockey. Let's be real.
Yeah, no, he really does. He looks more like a man. He looks more like a pro. And I think he wanted to, like you said, Taryn, and like he has said. And yeah, I think time away can offer good time for self-reflection. And I think you could tell Morgan got a lot of that and is really excited for camp. But let's shift gears a little bit and let's look at the other injury and let's look at the back end. Samuel Morin, it appears like he may have a knee injury. We don't know the severity or the significance of it. We're going to wait until we hear from Alain Vigneault and the Flyers on that. But if Samuel Morin can't start camp and can't be ready for the regular season, what does it do for others? Joe, I'll start with you. It looks like Samuel Morin may have been the seventh guy in the depth chart. So who maybe has the door opened a bit with this injury?
Well, first off, I'll say this. A guy with Sam's history, you never want to hear knee injury. And, you know, we talked about this on here before about Sam's attitude and just how great of a guy he is. And just, you know, the resiliency of him coming back from all these injuries. So we really hope that it's not another serious knee injury, because he has dealt with many of them. But as we know, guys that are his size, I'll say injuries to the back and lower extremities, generally, you know, they don't just disappear for guys his size. I mean, you see it in basketball all the time. So again, we hope the best for Sam. I'll say this, if it's not Sam, I think the obvious answer here is Cam York. The only thing I'll say about Cam York is he's another guy that is a big time prospect for them, and they're going to want him to play. And if he's the seventh defenseman, I'm not sure he's going to play that much, because I feel like, as we've talked about on previous podcasts here, that six-man defenseman, you know, it seems pretty set in stone. You know, we know about Ryan Ellis, we know about Provorov and Sanheim, and, you know, I don't think, obviously, Keith Yandle has the Iron Man streak going, so one would tell you he's going to play every game. I mean, there's not a lot of room to just get into the lineup every once in a while. So I would say that would give them some pause when it comes to Cam York. But I think he's the obvious answer. Unless you're looking for like a stopgap kind of guy, a guy that might be needed, but is generally okay watching a lot of games from the press box. And I don't think that's where they want Cam York.
No, they want him to play games. He had a highly successful season last year, but it was a whirlwind. He played for four different teams, obviously, Michigan, U.S. at the World Juniors. He played for the Phantoms and then the Flyers. Having him in a situation where it's a little more steady and consistent and playing games is probably great for him. But I will say, Joe, as you mentioned, if an injury happens to the guys that we think are going to be in their six, Samuel Morin maybe was the next man up. Now it just puts Cam York maybe one step closer to getting in the lineup if an injury hits the Flyers. But they do have some veteran guys that they did sign in the offseason, a little older, more pro experience, that maybe could be your good seventh man. Like you said, Joe, no problem having them watch games. Whereas Cam York, you want playing. Taryn, what
right. And I would just say, if I could just say one more thing, when you have guys like Justin Braun and Keith Yandel obviously has shown that he's durable, but you have guys like Justin Braun and veteran players, nagging injuries happen. So I would say if you have the opportunity, and obviously we're not wishing this to happen, where somebody's going to miss 2 weeks or 3 weeks and you can play Cam York in, I don't know, seven or eight games, by all means, I would take the opportunity to play him in the 7 or 8 games. It's just the injuries where a guy is out for this game or he might be out for that game. I don't think those are the situations where you want to bring Cam York up, because you got to think too, he's a young guy with a lot of expectations. You don't want to start playing with his emotions, come out and play a great game in the NHL and immediately take the bus back to Lehigh. I don't think that's healthy for a guy that you are going to be relying on in the future. So you don't want to do all this back and forth. So I would say if you have the opportunity to play consistent, you know, couple weeks, take it. But if it's a game, maybe 2 games, I would say look elsewhere.
Can we unbury the lead with the Sam Rand story, though? Because this is why I was laughing a little bit when we started talking about it. If you saw on YouTube, this has become like one of the more bizarre stories to come out of camp, because first, and I'm not going to call anybody out on this because I'm sure somebody did get from like some kind of source that just got it wrong, that Sam Rand had some traumatic knee injury. And, you know, I think all of us were just like, because we all really like everyone, I can speak for everyone in the media room, we all really like Sam. He is a really nice guy, genuinely works very hard and deserves a good career. There's a reason why we all pull for Sam when you hear these things. And I think that's why there was such a immediate like outpouring of compassion about there being a potential career ending injury on Sam's front. And then it comes out, let me see what time it came out last night. Then Riley Cote pushes out yesterday at like 12:30 in the afternoon, a text message exchange that he had with Sam saying, you know, hey, I'm really sorry if there's anything I can do, you know, I really feel for you. And Sam goes, oh, I'm all good. I don't know who tweet that got this information. My knee got banged up a little, but nothing major. Everyone been texting me. Ha 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 ha. So I'm hoping that Sam's okay. Because the kid does deserve, even if it doesn't make sense here, I hope that this leads as like an audition to somewhere else where he does have a NHL career. It means so much to him. But I do think the lead with this story kind of was like the bizarreness of it all, because we got Riley Cote out here breaking Sam Rand knee news. But I do think for everybody who's like jumping down different reporters' throats about them tweeting about it instantly, just know the only reason why there was such a strong reaction so early to the news, I do think it's because everyone wants Sam to do well. And it was a little bit gutting when I saw the news, I didn't tweet anything about it first. I was texting a few people being like, what's going on? And they were like, just hold off on saying anything, you know, whatever. And so I was like, okay, either it's really bad and that's why they don't want me to say anything, or it's really not what it seems, but they don't want to dispel it just yet till they know what it is. I couldn't really figure out. Don't be mean to people on Twitter about breaking that news, because I think it was just most people wanting Sam to do well and feeling bad about it. But no, I was glad when I saw that text message exchange where Sam put hot, like 85 ha-has about, I'm okay, my knee just got a little bit tweaked.
You gotta like the nice fake news.
I know. I was like,
Riley Cote as well.
Yeah. But, I still don't know anything. Again, AV's talking after we get done the podcast, which means by the time the podcast comes out, he probably will have already spoke. Hopefully he addresses it and everybody knows what's going on and it's nothing serious, but I think that's why, folks. So just keep things
I've just gotten to the bottom of who reported that originally, the devastating injury part.
Yeah.
But I'll keep it to myself.
No, I mean, I know, but it's not, you know, well, it's whatever. It's just, we hope Sam's okay at the end of the day. I think that's what this is all about. We hope Sam's all right. And I think, like everyone said, you know, Justin Braun's an older guy. At some point he might just need maintenance days and rest. And I think it's going to take those situations for Cam. And then probably Sam is next up to eat up some of that time. But again, that's all predicated on the idea that Sam's right. So we'll see.
Yeah. Long story short, there does appear to be some type of injury to Samuel Moran and that he could miss the start of training camp. It's not like nothing happened to him. We just don't know how severe it is or how significant. And as Taryn and Joe mentioned, yeah, I was personally thrilled to see Riley Cote's tweet because it was good just to see Sam saying, hey, it's not as serious because, yeah, let's be real. The guy's had two torn ACLs since the summer of 2018. Another injury to his knee would have been, if it was a serious one, it would have been, yeah, really difficult to stomach and would have been tough for Samuel Moran. So we hope he's okay. The humans in us definitely hope he's okay because he's a great guy, works hard, and we wanted to see him be competing for the lineup. So let's hope it's nothing serious. We will find out soon, like Taryn said. But yeah, there will be guys like Cam York and Igor Zamula and other guys, Linus Hogberg, plenty of guys that that could be headed to Lehigh Valley that will be chomping at the bit and pushing if there is an absence within the Flyers depth chart. But we will hit on all of it as training camp starts this week, and we're excited for it. We'll be tackling it all and bringing it to you, Flyers fans. But Taryn Hatcher and Joe Fordyce, thank you so much, as always. Great chatting with you. A big thank you to Ben Berry, our podcast guru. And also, Flyers fans, as always, thank you for listening to the latest Flyers Talk podcast presented by Great Railing. Wherever you get your podcast, please rate and listen, and we cannot wait to talk to you next time.